Selene Kurka, and I welcome you cordially to my podcast, Neue Musik Leben. I have studied classical singing, and I also sing classical music, but I also sing lots of contemporary and experimental music. And if you would like to know more about me, please look at my website, www.irenekurka.de. I put this into the show notes for you. Well, as some of you know, this is actually a German podcast, but now I really do on a regular basis, once a month, an English episode because, you ask for it in a way, and I'm also very happy and proud that this podcast is now really listened, worldwide, you say. You could also subscribe for my monthly newsletter on my website. And in this podcast, I talk with you about themes all around contemporary and new music. I share with you the insights, the behind the scene, and what is most important to me, I really want to bring you the human beings who are somewhat related to the new music world closer. I thank you for listening to this podcast. I know we are now really connected worldwide, as I said before, because this podcast shows up in charts in, countries that are far away from Germany. I'm cooperating with the NMZ, Neue Musikzeitung. In today's episode, I talk with the composer and organ player Naji Hakim, who was born in the Lebanon but has been living for a long, long, long time and working in France for a long time, also in Paris. And yeah, you will find about his exciting life in this episode. So please enjoy the interview with Naji Hakim.
Hello. Hello, Naji Hakim. I cordially welcome you into my podcast today.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to meet you.
And yeah, I'm always so thankful for the modern technical modalities that we can talk. I mean, you're sitting in France, close to the sea, and I'm sitting in Düsseldorf. And I actually gotten to know you because I started singing your Missa Recitationis, which is a piece for solo soprano, and I really like it a lot. I've been singing it quite a while, and I will continue to do so. And so I'm really excited to get to know you better this way today, and also all my listeners will hear who you are. And I would like to start with a question. How did you find your way into new and experimental music?
Well, I never think about new and not about experimental. For me, music is a real act of love and a testimony of my faith. I'm not trying. I'm confessing my love through music, through the gift God has given me.
How did it lead you there? I mean, you have been born in the Lebanon, and I'm sure that's a very different country than France. And how has this influenced you and maybe also your composing?
Well, you know, it was a privilege to be born in Lebanon and to be enveloped, surrounded by popular music that entered in my heart, in my soul. And even if I ignored it when I got to know classical music, this Arabic music is part of my person. And I remember my first experience is when I went to cut my hair with my mother the first time. And the barber, when he cut my hair, when he finished, he took an instrument of music and started playing. It was a lute. And I was so impressed. This was my first musical experience. It was like a dream. At that time, there were not so much loudspeakers. And music was done with real instruments.
That's nice that you meet the music at the barber shop.
Yes, yes.
Amazing.
My father was a music lover, and my mother too. My mother played the piano by ear, and my father, he listened to Beethoven, particular the first and the ninth symphony. And this was part of our daily life, listening to classical music. So I had these two different sources, which I was filled in. My soul was filled in by these two sources, Occidental and Oriental music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can feel that also in your Missa Resectionis. There is some section where I really feel it's somewhat Arabic. Yeah. And I like that kind of color in it and the twist in it.
What is amusing is that the Arabic influence didn't come in my music in my earlier works. It came little by little in my later works. That means around the year 2000. Before that, I was following the trajectory of Occidental background, influenced by my master Jean Langlais, the music by Messiaen, and Debussy, Ravel, Stravinsky. And little by little, something was attracting me to my roots. And that's how the Arabic influence came in my music.
Mm-hmm.
Not and calculated, it was instinctive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's cool. And was it then difficult for you to become a musician or a composer? What did people, your family thought about it, or was it normal?
Well, when I was in Lebanon, I remember when I was 9-10 years old, I felt I will become a musician. And when I finished my school studies, I said to my father, I want to study music. I want to dedicate my life to music. He said, look, I think it is not secure for you to be a musician in this country. It would be more reasonable that you make studies like medicine, law, or engineering. And if you do it, I will guarantee your music studies afterwards. It was very difficult for me to accept this, but I had so great respect and veneration to my father, and still have, even if he passed away, that for me it was something very sacred to respect his will. And I studied engineering. I became engineer de l'École Nationale Supérieure de Télécommunications in Paris. And in parallel, I continued my musical studies and went deeply in it when I entered the Paris Conservatoire Supérieur.
Mm-hmm. And when did you go to Paris? When did you make the switch from Lebanon to France?
Well, in 1975, October 1975.
Mm-hmm. And how was that going to Paris? I mean, it's so different, I assume.
Well, it was, for me, Paris was the Paris of Debussy, of Victor Hugo, of Baudelaire. It was a dream. And naturally, it was a shock for me to change completely society, the way of living, the way of eating. It was a different culture, but I entered in it and I loved it, and I became French. It's part of my person. I am two in one, as says the great Palestinian poet Mohammed Darwish.
And you already mentioned that you got to know Langley and Messiaen. How was it to work with such, I mean, they're so great musicians, and must be so rich to learn from them or be with them?
I did not study with Messiaen. But I studied with Langlais for 10 years. He was like a second father to me. And he prepared me to enter at the Conservatoire de Paris. It was a great master. He had a very strong instinct as a pedagogue. He knew what to say to encourage, and he knew from where I should go through to get to be a musician. And actually, he was a prophet, I must say, because right from the first meeting I had with him, the first lesson I had with him, at the end of the lesson, he told me, I have been teaching for 42 years. I never had a student like you. You will make a brilliant career. So you imagine me, 20 years old, what I could feel with such a testimony. A few years later, he met my parents in London, and he told them, after Messiaen and myself, it will be your son.
Wow.
It was very amusing, but because I succeeded Messiaen at La Trinité, and I followed the steps of my master Jean Langlais to become a composer.
Yeah. I mean, you have done so many great things as a composer and as an organ player. I mean, you played at the great big churches in Paris also for a long time.
Well, it was a benediction that I became organist at Basilique du Sacré-Cœur, especially where the organ was mysteriously beautiful. It was a consecration for me. And if I get to heaven, I will meet again the organ of the Basilique du Sacré-Cœur to play for the glory of God and echo the voices of the angels.
Yeah. Well, the thing that also stick out for me, I mean, singing your Missa, but also I looked at your repertory, and there also is a Magnificat that you actually use those Christian texts and you compose them. So how does this now fit all together with your background?
You know, I had distinctions, including a distinction from the Pope Benedictus. And a friend of mine wrote to me yesterday, I hope you'll get another distinction. I told him, look, baptism is the distinction which is most important for me. And I hope that at the end of my life, I would have deserved it. So all my life, you know, is and should be an act of faith and love. And I am Catholic, and I have a special devotion to the Holy Mary, Mother of God. And I have written many works inspired by this devotion. And many of my works are inspired by my faith.
And did this faith came when you came to Paris, or was it there before?
Well, what many Occidental people ignore or forget is that Christianism was born in Palestine, the Middle East. There is important Christian faith and community in Lebanon, and I grew up as a Roman Catholic.
Okay.
So, and I had the chance to be in a school, in a Christian school, Christian Brothers school, which was called Collège du Sacré-Cœur.
Oh, as how nice!
Preparing me for the Basilique du Sacré-Cœur.
Really, yes.
So this was really part of my life to be, to live as a Christian. Actually, as Muslims, to live in the presence of God at every single moment.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, you have been composing for the human voice, as I mentioned, this one piece. How is it for you to write for the human voice? Do you sing yourself?
Well, I used to sing when I was younger. I sang in a choir, but I didn't have the, once I became organist, and especially organist at Basilique du Sacré-Cœur, I was so concentrated on my playing the organ that I was making the organ sing, because the most poetical instrument of music is the voice, and all the other instruments are trying to get to this elevation, to get to this expressivity of the human voice. So I had opportunities to write through commissions. Sometimes I was inspired. For example, I want to quote the to quote my Trois Noël for choir a cappella. These were written after I had written a violin sonata. A violin sonata for violin and piano. Each of the three movements were based on a Christmas carol. Then I said to the curé of the Church of La Trinité, who was a very good friend of mine, Père Yves de Boisredon, I asked him, would it be possible to premiere this piece in the church? He said, oh, but of course, we can make three concerts and you can organize a whole program around it. So I calculated the program and had the idea with a student of mine who was choral conductor to write three arrangements of these three Christmas carols, and that's how I wrote the Trois Noël.
So it seems for you easy to write for the human voice, because I also sometimes hear from composers that they find it somehow difficult to write for the voice because it's so emotional or whatever it is.
To be frank with you, every single work is difficult to do.
Okay.
Yes, there is tension, psychological tension, concentration. You have to imagine. Even when I write for organ, you know, I never compose on the organ. I do it on the piano. For me, the piano is the king of the instruments. I disagree with Mozart, you know, who considers organ as the king of the instrument. For me, the piano, because with the pedal of the piano, you can dream of all the orchestra, you can dream of every single instrument, and the piano has expressivity which the organ has not. It has a different way to get to expressivity, but it's not the same as a note on the violin or on the piano or at the with the human voice.
And you also have been teaching a lot in the past, you told me. How was that for you then to pass on all your wisdom and experience?
You know, it's all is the same. There is one art, you know. In life, there is only one art. It's the art to love. And whatever activity you do, it should be done with the heart. Whether painting, making music, speaking, teaching, it's a communication. Art is a communication. So it's a different communication to teach. And I had great pleasure teaching. I taught in a school for very young children. And then I taught in a conservatory in Boulogne, where I taught analysis. So the contact with the students was very enriching. I think in a reciprocate way, And I learned a lot from teaching my students, as it's they inspired me to open scores which I would not have opened if I was not a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered many music through my teaching and through the remarks and suggestions of my students.
Yeah, it's always an ongoing process.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, you're composing and playing the organ. How do you find the balance within that? Can you do it both on one day, or do you say, no, now I'm composing and I don't play the organ?
Well, it depends upon the periods. At some periods, I'm able to teach, compose, practice in the same day. But in some periods, I have to concentrate on one activity. For example, when I wrote with my wife, Marie-Bernadette Dufourcé, who is a brilliant professional organist as well, and musicology professor, we wrote together two books, one Guide pratique d'analyse musicale and an anthology for music analysis. We spent many, many hours working on these books, so I could not compose at that period. And also when I was student at the conservatoire, until the age of 29, I did not compose a single note. Even if I wanted to, I did not have time because the harmony studies, counterpoint, fugue, take so many hours isolation that it was hard to find time to compose.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started at 29 years old and then went on.
Yeah, you wrote many pieces and one can look them up. There's lots of stuff out there.
If I want to be frank with you, I always feel guilty that I did not say yet what I should say. I have to say more than what I already have written.
Okay.
So I feel...
So you still have more to say. That's good. We are excited for your new pieces.
Well, you know, the real question is my question to God. Speak, your servant is listening. What do you expect me to do more? I'm at your service and I'm happy to do this until my last breath, whatever it will be.
How would you describe the music life in Paris? I mean, you lived there for such a long time. What is maybe specific about Paris or different than to other places you have seen?
You have, you know, Paris is so big city with so many possibilities. But I must say that as a church organist and a teacher, it's similar to a religious life, which means that I'm dedicated to my teaching, to my family life, and to my work as a composer and a concertist myself. So I went to concerts, but I could not go as much as I would have wanted. But of course, Paris has many concert possibilities, you know,
mm-hmm.
many venues.
And I mean, you moved away from Paris. How is that now to be more on the countryside and not so much in the center of France?
You know, wherever I am, I say thank you to God because I'm still alive every day. So I'm happy where I am, and I don't regret. I say thank you for the past, but I say thank you for the present, and my arms are open for the future. And I have the chance here to concentrate more on composition, and since I'm retired from teaching, I have more time to dedicate to my wife and children and grandchildren.
So how does a day in your life looks like? How do you structure it? And I'm curious.
Yeah, well, it is not like Hindemith. I don't have the same discipline I Hindemith, but I'm very hard worker. I work very, very, very hard. And my wife calls me sometimes Duracell. You know Duracell, the batteries.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
we had an advertisement on that. I don't know if you had the same with the rabbits that are.
Yes, exactly.
That we have that too in France. Okay.
Yes, yes, exactly the same one. Yeah, yeah. So she's impressed that I don't stop. I go. She said you should stop now. You have to eat to. So
yeah,
you're excited
and have the energy.
Well, I have energy, but as everybody, my body sometimes say stop. You have to relax.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And are you a very structured person, or you just go more by the flow?
No. It's very very order. Order is something very important in my whether performing work or as a composer. I make sketches, then I make draft, then I make inking down. And a few years ago, I started to write to replace the inking down by working with the computer, with Sibelius program. Yeah. But everything should be ordered, otherwise it's impossible, you know. I remember my orchestration teacher saying, if you leave just one mistake in the score, you have to calculate that when it will be played by the orchestra, one mistake is nothing much, but the time to correct the mistake is 1 minute. But 1 minute multiplied by the number of people in the orchestra, it makes 1 hour. You have to pay this hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yes. I'm very fussy about having things written as perfect as possible. It is never perfect, but as much as possible, not leaving mistakes. So proofreading and proofreading again and mm-hmm. again.
And the interpreters will be very thankful to you.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah. Otherwise, we have to do sometimes the work and figure out the mistakes. And
you know, it's like, you know, the first symphony by Arthur Honegger. If you the music is very inspired, but if you take the orchestral score, there are no dynamics indications at all. So how the orchestra is going to do? The answer is that the conductor has to do everything.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. There is a great work which should be done by the conductor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an important point you address. I realized that too sometimes with scores or when whatever composers don't think about that singers have to breathe.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I teach workshops to composers, then I say, well, you can do that, but then you leave it up to me. I make then the decision where I want to breathe,
yeah,
or
yeah.
I think it's good to breathe. And the thing is always, do you want to, you know, make a suggestion, or you leave it up to the interpreter? And even with like Mozart, I find that oftentimes he built that in, because the phrases were often in a length that you really can sing it on one breath, and then there would be a rest. But it's everything fine. I mean, I can make decisions. I'm musical, and so...
Yeah, yeah.
Or if there's no dynamic, like you say, then I can think about, oh, do you have an idea, or know that I have to ask the composer again?
And, you know, when I finish writing a piece of music, a movement, it takes quite a long time to put the dynamics. It's very annoying, it's difficult, but you have to write it. You have to think about it and imagine what really you want. Is it forte or piano? You have to say.
Yeah, certainly. And who or what has played the greatest role in shaping you, or what inspires you?
As a master, I think Jean Langlais was the personality who carried me, who lifted me up. But as a musical inspiration, so many composers, but in particular, Stravinsky and Gershwin. Not only, but you know, if I have to name just two names, it would be these two.
Okay. So you like the rhythmic also.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
And I always found it interesting. I mean, I think you're doing a good job that in this, like I call it music business, you have to be authentic. And I mean, sometimes you might also get funny offers. And how do you do that? That you really do your thing and follow your path? I sometimes find that young artists also find it difficult to really find their way and be authentic themselves.
This is not a problem. Always authentic. No compromise. No compromise. Always with. I'm authentic with myself.
I feel that. So, but did you have students where you had to help them, or how could you help them to really stick to themselves and not being carried off by something funny? You know,
I really don't believe that you can teach composition. You can teach harmony, you can teach counterpoint, you can teach fugue, you can teach orchestration. But composition, if you say to the student, I don't agree with what you have done, the student could tell you, but I want this. But the only thing you could say to the student, you know, it is not coherent. The proportion is not good. There is no homogeneity in the language. But this is very, very quick, you know. It's not interesting for me to teach composition. I know. But, and you know, Bartok, when he was invited to teach in the American universities, he said, okay, we will analyze the works of the masters of the past. That was the contents of the composition course.
Mm-hmm.
And I take a simple but great example, the Inventionen and Sinfonien by Johann Sebastian Bach at 2 and 3 voices. These are composition lessons. They were conceived as composition lessons by Johann Sebastian Bach. It was like a treatise of composition, because at this period there were no treatises of composition, by the example. I think the examples of the masters are lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Composition. So,
is then creativity easy for you? Do you always get great ideas, or what can I do about that to find my creative flow and my expression?
Each work is a different problem. And this is a challenge. The challenge is part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And the game is to win the game, to win the challenge. Yeah. And art comes out of the constraint, of the difficulty. You have to write a piece for one instrument. But one instrument is not enough. I want a big orchestra. No, I give you just one instrument. With one instrument, you have to fill all the 5 minutes or 10 minutes you have at your disposal to give your musical expressive poetical message. It could be with an orchestra, but it could be with chamber ensemble or one instrument or one voice.
And so whenever it feels challenging, you says it can be very difficult, you just keep going and you sit down every day again until it shows up.
But sometimes, you know, I have suggestions to make something which with rules are incoherent with texts, for example, which don't go together. And so, and in this case, I say, no, I'm sorry. It's not for me. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was commissioned to write my Römisches Triptychon for soprano and organ, I was approached by soprano Andrea Reuter. Mm-hmm. She was so tactful and delicate when she asked me. She said, before asking another composer, I want you to consider the project. I told her, you know, I'm not fluent in German. I don't know German. Please give me some time to think. I took 6 months to say yes. But I said yes. But once I said yes, I took German lessons. I wanted to understand every single word in the text and the accentuation. And I did the work. And the singer was happy. And I'm happy with it. And now when I listen to it after 20 years, I say to myself, well, that's it. I don't want to change anything in it. That's because cool. I took time to ink down the very last note in a final way. That's it. So mm-hmm. that answers your first question. I don't do experiments.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do experiments. I find what I want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I want to offer you a flower bouquet, I don't do an experiment. I choose a beautiful bouquet of flowers and I offer it to you. I'm sorry, I cannot do it now.
Well, it's, you pronounce it very good, the Römische Trichtichon, which is not an easy word. And you obviously are very talented with languages anyway. I mean, that
well,
seems
I speak a few languages.
Yeah. You're quite fluent. That's really amazing. And also that you thought it through if you really want to do this piece. But I guess once you were, when you said, okay, I'm doing it, then you probably already have composed it in your head, or didn't you?
You know, once I was giving a master class in Ingolstadt, Germany, and I was teaching in French, and there was a charming lady translating, and I wanted to make a surprise to her and to all the group at the last lesson, and so I asked somebody to translate the following text. Ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, I do speak German, but all this week was a comedy I have done just to have the chance to be translated by this charming lady. So she didn't know if she had to translate what I was saying in French or what.
Yeah, but obviously you were fine with her. You didn't correct her.
You know, I would have wanted to be a comedian as well, you know.
Really?
Oh, yes. But you cannot do, I couldn't do more than being a musician.
And are there pieces by you that have a kind of something humoristic in it as well?
Well, I think so. I think okay. So. I wrote a piece called Carnaval, a piece for organ called Carnaval, based on a Basque dance. Actually from Navarra, and it's very happy, very very joyful.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I really enjoyed talking to you. And yeah, you're far away. Hopefully one day we also meet at some point. And we are actually at our last question for today. And my last question is, which tip would you like to give young artists?
It's so easy. Love and do what you want. This sentence is not by me. It's by Saint Augustine. Love and do what you want. It was a great pleasure meeting you and talking with you.
It was a great pleasure for me too.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you. And please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.